I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today marks the end of an era at WCAI. News director Sean Corcoran is moving on to be managing editor at our parent station, WGBH, in Boston. While he remains in the family, so to speak, we thought it appropriate to take a look back at some of his award-winning journalism. It's not just a retrospective of his work. It's also a look back at how our region has changed and in some ways remained the same over the past 12 years. Morning, Sean.
Good morning, Mindy.
Of course, congratulations. You know, it's kind of bittersweet for all of us.
Bittersweet indeed, but thank you for asking me to do this.
Yeah, so looking back, 2005 is when you joined us, but that was as a freelancer.
I was a freelancer. I was a newspaper guy who moved to the Cape, didn't know a lot about the region, and I sought out the station. I wanted to get into NPR-style radio. I'd made that decision already, and there was a news director here who helped me do that, and I'll always be appreciative of that. And we started doing radio, and it was, you know, WCAI, small station, already had been winning some journalism awards, but there was no full-time reporter. So I was here as a freelancer from 2005 till 2007 when they made me the first staff reporter.
Yeah, so it was much smaller group back then. We were tiny.
We were tiny. The building looked a lot different.
That's right.
You know, they had all that awful asbestos siding on the outside, but we've done a lot of work, and the station has grown, you know, of course, yeah, thanks to the listeners who support it.
Absolutely. Do you remember what your very first story was?
I do. The first news feature I did was about this bird house, a house filled with birds in Harwich, I think it was.
I don't remember that.
There was a guy. Well, actually, it's lost. I've tried to find it,
and
it was recorded on what's called DAT. There was a short period of time in radio when we stopped using these little mini discs and started using these DAT tapes, maybe 8 years of that business, but I don't know where it is, the story anymore, but it was wild that this house, there were so many birds. The birds, these huge, like, parrots and such, were in the guy's bedroom. They were all over the house and squawking, and there was lots of, I figured, you know, it's a great radio story, right? Flapping wings and squawking birds, but there was some tragedy to the story that I recall, that several of the birds had died after eating some grapes.
Ooh.
That perhaps they thought might have been tainted with some sort of poison or
pesticide or
perhaps.
Yeah. Birds are very sensitive, yeah.
Yeah, I think, and they lost like six or seven birds in a row. It was very, it was a touching thing to sit there with the gentleman as he's talking about these birds that he cared for so much. They were rescue birds, too. Mm. But I do, I remember all the stories.
Yeah.
I remember all the interviews.
You know, a lot of people wonder, how do you find these stories? You know, and like, I'm just thinking, how did you find out about this guy and his birds?
I had read something on the internet where he had, I think, posted a question about, hey, I lost these birds. This was the narrative. And that's how I found him. It hadn't been in, like, the newspaper or something. Radio people pay attention to other media and not just, hey, this is the story of the day, but this would be a good radio story.
Mm-hmm.
So we're thinking sonically. We're thinking we want to tell stories that are driven by sound scenes and voices and such. So there might be a great news story that everyone should be covering, but a great radio story is kind of special.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to chime in this morning. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And it wasn't long after you arrived, you reported on a poverty series that really made people take notice. I still think to this day it's kind of controversial. There's a lot of people who think of Cape Cod and the islands as this idyllic place where nothing bad happens, and it's, of course, not reality.
That's true. So the series was called Two Cape Cods, Hidden Poverty on the Cape and Islands. And there was and there persists this idea that, you know, there aren't people here that really struggle. This is a place, a playground for the rich. And of course, those of us who are here full time, and even though many of us who visit realize that's not the case. Actually, I know we pulled some tape. Maybe we should play Mary Anderson. She used to run the family pantry of Cape Cod in Harwich, and she was one of my first interviews about this topic. And she told me when her father started the family pantry, her and her brother used to tease him mercilessly because they were like, who are you going to feed on Cape Cod? Actually, I don't want to take it away from her, so let's hear it.
So this is 16 years ago, and my brother and I just kept teasing him and said, who are you going to feed on the Cape, Dad? You know, we had been down here as vacationers, and as vacationers, you're at the beach and you're having cookouts in the backyard, and poverty was not evident. And he just kept telling us, there is poverty out there. Having watched the pantry grow from a little tiny storefront to now this large warehouse, I've learned over the 16 years that there certainly is poverty on the Cape. But it's not, as you say, readily identifiable. You don't drive through a neighborhood and see that. I think it's a quieter poverty. I think it's the some of it's the people that have seasonal jobs and then maybe can do two jobs during the summer, and then once the summer season closes down, they're down to that one job, and it's hard to make ends meet. It's a quieter poverty.
It's a good way to put quiet. Although that poverty is certainly, the food pantries have grown since you did this interview with Mary. Yeah,
They have, and it was growing then. I can remember later that day, I met these three older sisters, and well retired, and they were there, and they really set me straight. They were like, you know, this isn't what I expected in my retirement. We had our husbands, and then we lost them, and taxes, and now we're here. And I just remember how excited they got about certain items that were in the pantry that were kind of treats for them, things they couldn't usually get. And, you know, what happens often to me when I'm out there reporting is that my eyes do I feel so much compassion for people.
Well, and that series held some surprises for a lot of people. I mean, you did a story pretty much in every town.
There were 20. You say that people noticed. Well, yeah. People noticed in my own profession. I had, you know, colleagues call me up. You did a 20-part series,
which is like crazy. Yeah, it's a lot.
I was determined to have a story come from every community because this is an issue that crosses all communities. Go to Chatham. I think Chatham was one of the stories I did about food insecurity and some of the things that go on there. But people never think about it. So, yeah, we went to both islands and every town to find sources for this story.
And you didn't have any problem finding poverty in each and every town, which
no.
I think is what surprised a lot of people. It was, I think one of the, if I'm remembering correctly, one of the things that sort of got us all thinking this way was the number of kids in Dennis that were on the free lunch program. It's a huge percentage. I want to say it's close to 50%.
I don't recall the percentage. I wouldn't want to try to quote it, but it was huge. And for me, that was a good way to kind of gauge the community and gauge poverty. Take a look at how many kids are taking free and reduced lunch, how many qualify for that. And then talking to the lunch people, it was really remarkable. They would said, look, we know the kids. We know the kids who are going home and having a bag of chips because mm-hmm. that's all there is, or there's nobody there. We know what the ones that show up hungry and need breakfast in the morning. And actually, there's another piece of tape. This is a woman I met named Sheila McGorman of Orleans. She's one of those seasonal workers that that Mary Anderson was talking about. And she had lost her job, and she was on unemployment, looking for another job, had been cobbling together part-time jobs. And she talked about her son, Joey, who was 5. And I'll never forget her showing me her cabinets and the food that she had or didn't have.
Yeah, if I don't find a job before my unemployment runs out, I can see myself becoming homeless. It's a very frightening thing. It's frightening enough for just me, but having a child, it's even more frightening because he shouldn't have to worry about having a place to live. You know, I mean, a child they shouldn't have anything to worry about. You know, and when I was a kid, I don't remember ever worrying about anything. I mean, I know my mom and dad struggled, but I never felt worried. I was never worried that I wouldn't have a place to live or that I wouldn't have clothes or that I wouldn't have food. And I sure don't want that to happen to Joey.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, that's very emotional. And sometimes it's really not that difficult when you're interviewing someone. You'll suddenly find out, yes, they're crying. And I almost never use the tape of someone crying. Mm. But in this case, it just stayed with me. In the weeks after that interview, what she said there just stayed with me. But we're not just about journalism that sparks emotion. I'm really into solutions-based journalism, to just put up a bunch of voices and anecdotes. That's not enough. We need to find the people who are doing things to make things better, people who are thinking of solutions. And every series that we've done here, I think, has attempted to do that and offer something for us to move forward with.
Right. And we should mention that that series, that 20-part series, you won a Columbia DuPont Award for that, which is a very, for people who don't know, that is a very big deal.
It was a real honor.
Yeah. Being a Columbia grad on top of that.
Yes, as a Columbia Journalism School grad. I do remember going to the award ceremonies when I was a student and being very impressed by the whole thing. And to be standing up there was like I said, just a real honor. And I know it made the people at the station really happy and proud.
Yeah, of course. And then you followed up that series, Two Cape Cods, with Price of Paradise. And that was kind of what a lot of people, the price people paid to live here.
Another 20-part series. Mm-hmm. This one really looked at people doing different jobs, and so many people just work so hard just to pay their taxes, to pay their mortgage, and to stay here in paradise. And most are happy to do it because they love it here. But it's a struggle.
Yeah.
It's a struggle. There are, you know, we're limited in the types of jobs that we have here.
Right. And as we were hearing, it's sometimes two and three jobs. And, you know, you do what you can during the season because, you know, in the off season, those jobs aren't here. Although it seems like the season's expanding a little bit with the shoulder seasons now, which help out.
But it depends where you are on the Cape as well, you know.
Right.
And I know we're going to talk about the Cape Wind Project to install 130 wind turbines in Nantucket Sound, which is still kind of hanging on. But one of the things that came up in that debate with people who do struggle to stay here, who consider the ocean kind of their respite, who go out, that whole debate was kind of framed as a rich people not wanting to look out their window. But us who are here know it was much, much more nuanced than that. And it was very difficult for people who love the Cape to kind of come around to where they landed on that.
Right.
And that was like a decade of reporting.
More than a decade. And the interesting thing about that issue was people really had strong feelings on each side. I mean, this was an issue that that most people didn't come down, well, you know, we'll see what happens. It was, I really want it or I really don't want it.
Very strong feelings. And someone explained it to me. Many people who live on Cape Cod consider themselves environmentalists, that they love it here and they love the environment. That's often why we're here. But she said these people have to decide what type of environmentalist they want to be when they face this project. Do I want to be an environmentalist of this place, this beautiful Nantucket Sound, or am I more an environmentalist of the globe and recognize climate change and just doing something in my own backyard to address it? Very difficult. I can tell you, I never came around to how I felt about that project. It was not useful to me in my reporting, and no one will ever tell you otherwise, because you got to play that straight down the middle, because everybody has a point.
Yeah. And that was the interesting thing about it, too. I mean, we did so, I don't even know how many reports we did over the years on it. Did you ever count them up?
No, but I did do a 35-minute documentary about it.
About the history.
10 years in.
Yeah.
That was quite a challenge. But you go back and you get some of the archival tape of some of the fights that occurred between people.
It was
wild. You go to these meetings and the people dressed up as pirates and banging drums, and it's like, what is this?
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are saying goodbye to Sean Corcoran, who is moving on to be managing editor at our parent station, WGBH in Boston, looking back at some of his award-winning journalism. It's also a look back on the region and how we've changed, or maybe not so much changed, over the past 12 years. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to chime in this morning. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We have an email from Susan who says, you will be greatly missed, especially on the Friday news roundup. Good luck in Boston. That roundup has really become so popular over the years. You know, if you miss the week's news. And that roundup is not going away. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. Our new news director is going to join us, and we'll talk about the future, if you will.
Right. The roundup's been wonderful for me because I like talking to reporters.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
okay, you get this different perspective. Yeah.
Different perspectives. I know what these folks are up to out there. I know what it's like to sit through 5-hour school committee meetings and then go back and write up a story. You have to become an expert on everything really quickly. And you're just working hard and probably not getting paid a lot because you really believe in the First Amendment and you believe that people need to have this information and that someone should be out there paying attention to what's happening, because most of us are doing, like we've talked about, working multiple jobs, taking care of their children, taking care of their parents, whatever it is. They don't have the time to go to these meetings and pay attention to what our government is up to and request documents and then fight to get those documents. So the reporters do it.
Yeah.
And it's really an honor to sit and talk with them each week about their hard work.
Yeah. One of the things that you've focused on in your tenure here as news director is series reporting. So tell us about why we focus on that.
Well, we have a small staff, and doing a series of stories, really a deep dive into something, is a way to make a big impact, and we really can't chase the daily stuff. We're fortunate we have these wonderful news partnerships with different newspapers and news entities, my colleagues at the newspapers and the news services. They really do a great job chasing the daily news and informing us about that. So we're more interested in the crime trends and social impacts of individual incidents rather than just individual stories. And so we'll dive deep into things. We have done collaborations with our local media friends. You hear the voices on the News Roundup, of course, and in the morning and in the afternoon, we did a really nice series with the Cape Cod Times a few years ago on the 50th anniversary of the Cape Cod National Seashore. Right. So kind of putting together our different assets to produce something that I think came out really good. So the media here, I think, is looking to do the best job that it can, even as resources become more limited.
Yeah. Let's talk to Charlie, who's giving us a call from Harwich. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning. Good morning. I just want to say congratulations. Our loss is Boston's gain, but I've enjoyed your, particularly your Friday summaries. I'm often working when you're on the Friday summary, so I don't always get a chance to pick it up, but it's a very good review of the weekend's, the week's news, and in my business, it's always helpful to get caught up, so I think you folks have done a fantastic job of calling it down the middle, as you say. I've been involved in the Cape Wind matter for years, and in favor of keeping this project out of the sound, but I've always admired the objectivity of those reports. So congratulations. Yeah. We're going to miss you.
Well, thank you, Charlie. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, thanks, Charlie, for the call. And I think, Charlie, he brought up a good point. It's not the objectivity just for a controversial issue, but it's the same thing when we cover politics. The thing is, you want everybody coming to the table feeling equal. And it's important that we remain objective and that we don't take sides, so that everybody gets to hear the different arguments and make up their own mind.
Absolutely. Yeah. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Let's go back to some of the series that we've done, because when you look back at, I'm just kind of looking at the list of some of the things we've covered, it's hard to think of wow, we really did all that.
Yeah. Different lengths, sometimes 3 parts, sometimes 10, 20, whatever. Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station, deep dive into that. Groundwater pollution at the military base was another one. We were the local papers were reporting on what was happening in Falmouth with the 2 town-owned wind turbines once they turned on. But we took a really close look at the science behind that. We're fortunate to have a scientist on staff, a journalist, also a scientist. And so we took 5 parts. And that was a story. You know, these wind turbines started spinning, and even people in the neighborhood who supported them and wanted them as a symbol of what they were doing for renewable energy and climate change, they started spinning, and some people just said that they were very affected by them, compared it to maybe like seasickness or something, and headaches.
That's where it happens to some people and not others.
That's
yeah.
right. And I don't think people were really listening or paying attention. It was just kind of, and so we paid attention, and we got some flack for that, because we all want to think that these renewable energy initiatives are a great solution to a major problem. But in that little section of Falmouth, as we just saw, a judge this week just ordered them to shut them down completely. So I'm proud that we went there and listened to these folks and let people know, hey, at least consider what they're saying. Right.
Well, and the other thing, I think a point that was made out of that is citing. I mean, where you cite these things is really crucial. There's a lot of components that go into putting it in the right place. Yeah.
That's definitely true. And it was not just a straightforward, well, they went up and these people say they're sick. There was a lot behind it. There was a lot of backstory to it, including where they came from, how long they'd been mothballed, what type of technology it is, and what we'd heard from the company that had created it about their siting and all that. And it really tore Falmouth apart politically, as we've had some different elections around them and such. And I don't think that story
is not going away. No,
that story is not over. Alzheimer's disease.
I was gonna say, you've done a lot on Alzheimer's.
I have. Three series on Alzheimer's.
It's a big issue.
It's a big issue. It's important to people in our region, of course. We did one on caregivers. We did one on a charity that actually goes out and finds specific doctors to put together a team of people in different areas of the science to try to find a cure. And then I was really fortunate. I went around the country to different research labs to find out what's going on and how research is moving forward. So Alzheimer's was a lot. We did the long haul series,
the fishing series, 10-part fishing series. And, you know, this kind of goes back to what you were saying about not just, you know, kind of putting the problem out there, but trying to look at solutions. And we did that in the long haul, is we tried to find, you know, some fisheries that were having some success and you know, why and how can we, you know, replicate that in other fisheries.
I learned a lot. I'm kind of a guy who doesn't like to get on boats either.
That's right.
So I picked my stories really, really carefully.
Assigned them.
And I assigned others. But the whole staff, it's just an amazing staff here. It really is a lot of talent.
That was a series that everybody on staff was involved with somehow.
And if they weren't involved with the radio part, they were involved with what became a book. We made a book out of the long haul suggestion from a listener. Yeah. And we're like, well, let's do it. Yeah. There'll probably value here. And we added to it. And I think it came out really well. And we included the DVD of all the stories with it. So,
yeah. And then you, for a long time, were doing a series, A Life Remembered. You want to talk about that?
A Life Remembered, yes. That's an obituary series that we did for several years. And with kind of the premise is that everybody, even your neighbor who maybe you didn't know very well or anyone, has a story to tell when they pass away about their life. And so many of us, you know, the little things we do just ripple out into the community. So I chose people to go to their family after someone died. I just looked at the obituaries and I would ask them, hey, I'd like to do a story about your loved one. Sometimes they said no, and I completely understood. I don't pressure people at all to come on the radio. But others, some of the most touching moments were going to these people's homes and having them show me photographs or play tapes. And there's this one woman, I'd love to play it if we can, this woman, Helen Lewis. I reached out to her granddaughter, and she took me to where the assisted living facility where Helen Lewis lived her final years. And let's hear this tape of this wonderful story about this woman's kind of last days. Her friends and family say she was a woman who shared a lot, whether it was wisdom, stories, or meals. For her roommate and friend, Cynthia Carafa, Lewis shared something bigger, her unwavering faith that God would take care of her.
I got comfort from that. I'm not afraid. I was afraid of dying when I came in here. You know, I've always been afraid of dying, but I'm no longer, because of Helen, I'm no longer afraid of dying. When it happens, it happens.
For Helen Lewis, it happened on a Saturday morning after a life well lived. And a jelly donut.
Oh, my goodness. Now, the jelly donut, how interesting that came to be.
That's Lewis's youngest granddaughter, Jamie Brown.
The night before, she had dinner, and it wasn't pureed. It was supposed to have been pureed because she had some issues swallowing.
Dinner got sorted out, but the next morning, Jamie was sure to get back to her grandma's room early to make certain breakfast was done right. It was oatmeal and scrambled eggs with coffee, milk, and OJ. The eggs made her cough.
And it just so happens that one of her friends came by, and she had a donut. She had a jelly donut, and my grandmother just grabbed the donut. And she was like, yoink, and then she grabbed the donut, and she just inhaled it.
In the days before that gooey, sugary morning, Lewis wasn't well. But as she chomped away, she didn't cough once. Sharon Rodarty was her hospice nurse.
Helen had had a fairly bad week. She wasn't feeling well. And I came in that Saturday morning. Helen was sitting up in her bed, smile on her face. Her granddaughter was here from New York visiting. She had jelly all over her nightgown. And I said, Helen, you've got jelly all over you. She said, yep. She said, I had a jelly donut. It was wonderful. And she said, and Jamie's here. That's her granddaughter. And I said, well, I think the jelly donut and Jamie are the best medicine. She said, yeah, I feel wonderful. And about 5 minutes later, while I was still in here, she started having some difficulty breathing. And within 5 minutes, she passed away.
We should mention that piece also won a Gabriel Award, another national award.
Yeah, the series won a Gabriel, which was nice because the Gabriels are focused on what you're doing to report about your community.
Right.
So that's a real
right.
that's a real nice honor
exactly.
as well.
You know, and I'm thinking we were talking about some of the series that we've done and the issues that we've covered over the years. And some of them are ongoing, like affordable housing, traffic.
Oh, sure.
You know, there's like some that just seem to be perennial that we never really seem to solve. I mean...
Oh, absolutely. There's certainly trends that have that have emerged over the years, and we try to we try to go back to some of those stories and find out, you know, what's the latest, what's happening.
Yeah. We also file stories for NPR here when there's something that's of national interest, and certainly you have filed a number of NPR stories.
Yes, I enjoy filing for NPR. It's a different type of story they're looking for. I mean, it can be locally based, but they want kind of a national angle. I remember the first one was about a boy. He was 18-year-old, Alexander Haas, who was a graduate of Nauset Regional High School. He was about to go off to the Maritime Academy, and he went off the road. They couldn't find him. They couldn't find the car. So the police actually reached out to his cell phone service to see if they could track his cell phone. Now, in 2005, people weren't even thinking about that. Mm-hmm. And it took a couple days for the cell phone company to kind of get the message and track the location of the phone. By that time, the car had been found, and Alex had died in that crash. It was very, very tragic. But for the network, I did do a story about the cell phones and the tracking, and I guess they get... Even in 2005, they were getting thousands of requests from law enforcement on a daily basis to track people's cell phones.
Oh. All right. So you also did something when Ted Kennedy died?
I'll never forget that because that was a 3 o'clock in the morning phone call from NPR, get on the air to announce, you know, that Ted Kennedy had died, and we knew he was ailing. I had some stuff prepared, but then in the next few days were just a whirlwind, and going and talking to people, visitors. I can remember these people from Ireland just talking about how important Ted Kennedy was to them, and just through tears, because he had really been a big motivator behind the peace process over in Ireland, and they were so upset. And people talking about just what the Kennedys mean to locals here. And I can remember standing and waiting for the car to go by, the hearse to go by as it headed up to leave Cape Cod and go up to the Kennedy Library in Dorchester. Very emotional. I was on NPR a lot, and the takeaway, and just. It was very memorable. Memorable.
And of course, whenever we have any kind of weather, people always want to hear about weather.
Hurricanes. It's almost like NPR would put you on retainer to like cover the hurricane. And thankfully, we haven't had really too much of a hurricane since I got here.
Yeah.
I think I covered Earl might have, and that was like, it was like a bad windstorm.
Hurricane Bob's the last big one, 1991.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean our insurance isn't going up
every
year.
There's another issue we've covered a lot.
That's right.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Another mark that we have here is what we call sonics, those little vignettes that we hear throughout the day, which, of course, is Jay Allison's baby. I mean, he thought that up, and it's brilliant.
Oh, they're great. And I produced about 100 Sonics working with Jay Allison and Vicky Merrick and Sam Brown and the folks at Atlantic Public Media and Jay giving me his philosophy about Sonics. So every Sonic I produced with the help with Vicky, we had to screen for Jay and get it over that bar. And they're really special, and they really give the station a certain sound. And maybe we could play a few
of them.
Yeah,
let's play a couple of them. Some of your favorites.
Okay, a few of my this veteran, this World War II veteran. I always enjoyed talking to the veterans, though. Again, talk about emotional interviews, mm-hmm. what these people saw. There was a guy I met, an old radio guy. You'll hear it in his voice. Bob Silverberg told me I think he read me a poem.
This is some poetry I put to paper just a few years ago when the present war started.
World War II veteran Bob Silverberg of Barnstable reading his poem, Okinawa.
The battle was over. The opposing armies had since left the area. Survivors had moved on to the next hill and the next. The trees were shattered, splintered, burned, their twisted trunks like black and white negatives against a full color background. Trees destroyed and left to die, because they were there when the war went by. Below the slope was a native home, surprisingly still quite intact. And yet, as we reached the hut, we came across three bodies, a man, a woman, and a child. A family simply living alone in what had become a battle zone. No way of knowing did they hide or why they dared to step outside, but across their doorstep, side by side, this is where that family died. Not their choice to live or die, just that they were home when the war went by. And it still makes me choke up. And it happened 62 years ago now.
Yeah, I get teary-eyed just
hearing
it.
Yeah.
Another one.
Yeah.
This is Barbara Yamamoto. This was a story about the Audible Local Ledger, which is a service for blind folks who are blind. And so it's a radio service. People read the newspaper and such. And it was going to go out of business. They needed, I think, like $20,000. I might have the number wrong.
I think it was $20,000.
I think it was $20,000. And it was one of the very few times do you actually hear the impact of your story. But I got a call from the director after this story aired saying someone heard it. I think it was a doctor, and called up and gave the $20,000.
To keep them going.
To keep them going. But Barbara Yamamoto, when she said this, it was almost like Jay's voice was in my head. That is a sonic. Let's hear Barbara.
My husband is a retired dairy farmer. A dairy farmer works 7 days a week. He had never seen the ocean. So when we were married, we came to the Cape so he could see the ocean.
The late Barbara Yamamoto of Harwichport.
His eyes filled with tears, and he said, I have to live here. And here we are, and here we intend to stay.
That's a great one, too.
She was such a sweet woman. And I just asked you, how did you come to Cape Cod? And that came out. It's like, wow, he'd never seen the ocean. And then finally, one more sonic. This is Bill Evall, who is an artist in Provincetown who became a friend, actually. And I went to talk to him just to get sonics because the man just he's a storyteller. And he actually introduced me to a man named Jerry Nelson, who also became a friend who used to invite me to play music. And it was really a wonderful part of living here to go and play music with.
He was also the voice
of the Count. Yeah. Jerry Nelson was one of Jim Henson's primary puppeteers, and just a wonderful man. And we have several sonics from him. He talks about turkeys. He does voices from the 40s and 30s old radio. But this was Bill Evall telling a story with he had his stand up bass with him as he told this story.
Foggy evening, and you hear the foghorn out at Wood End, actually.
Bass player Bill Evall of Truro.
All of us musicians were sitting around saying, what note is that? And Joe Hawthorne had perfect pitch, and he said, oh, that's A flat. So it sounds something like this. That's pretty close to Wood End.
And that funny. Laugh, Billy's laugh, is just contagious.
We have a note here from Shelley Christensen. She says, most listeners know Sean as the consummate reporter. I was fortunate to know him as the consummate editor. During my stint as the Martha's Vineyard commentator, Sean was always a coach, never a hatchet man. He never changed my work and said, read this. Instead, he challenged me to improve my work myself in my own words and in my own style. He was a bit buttoned down in that Columbia School of Journalism way, but I fully respected that. Sean's new charges in the big city can look forward to a thoroughly professional relationship and growth experience. Best of luck to you, Sean.
Oh, what a nice note from Shelley Christensen. Yeah. Thank you, Shelley. It was a pleasure to work with you. You made it easy.
Yeah. And we are saying goodbye to Sean this morning. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Our new news director joins us after this break. You're listening to The Point. We're saying goodbye to Sean Corcoran, who is moving up to Boston to be the managing editor at our parent station, WGBH. 866-999-4626 is our number. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Sean, we got another email. Lynn in Marston's Mill says, you are one of the many reasons that WCAI is my go-to station at all times, and it has been an absolute pleasure to hear your voice over these years. I love that you are a true journalist asking the questions that need to be asked and giving facts and information that we need as residents of the Cape and citizens of the world. You'll be greatly missed. All the best wishes to you on your new endeavor. WGBH is lucky to be getting you. And yes, they are.
Wow, that's really nice. It's nice to hear from people that I don't know who have just been out there taking in the radio.
And before we say good morning to the new news director, tell us what you're going to be doing up in...
The title is Senior Managing Editor, but these titles don't mean a lot. I'm going to be doing journalism. I'm going to be focused on the shows, the Morning Edition show and the All Things Considered show in Boston. I'm going to be editing reporters, the science desk. Heather Goldstone and I will still be working closely together. I'll also still have my hand in... some of that stuff it lands here on WCAI. Right. So
we may still hear your voice from time to time.
You may still hear my voice. And I'm also working on a podcast that we're hoping to launch soon with Greg O'Brien, who is a Brewster resident who has early onset Alzheimer's disease. So we're having a podcast called The Forgetting. And the co-host is a man named David Schenck, who is an author and a researcher. He knows a lot about Alzheimer's. He kind of leads the discussion with Greg O'Brien. It's very compelling and very useful, and I'm looking forward to that launching. And that is a CAI production. So,
so
I'm not
you will be
that.
Here for that. Okay.
I will be coming back for those records, and I'll be the executive producer of that podcast.
So our new news director is a familiar voice to our listeners, Steve Jones. Junker, good morning.
Good morning, Mindy. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Steve.
And so, you know, change is always tough for people. So maybe, Steve, you can talk a little bit about, you know, your coming into this and maybe where we're going. Your thoughts on your philosophy of news.
I have to say, listening to the first portions of this program, Sean, is impressive. What a journey you've been on, both with the station and with the region. Just reporting for that 12 years, you've really tracked an incredibly rich and diverse set of stories. And it's fascinating to hear some of those clips played back.
Well, it really is an honor to be able to have a place where you can, you know, really dive into things and pay attention and go talk to lots of folks and not just rush to get something right on the air. So I've been honored to be here.
I think you set an impressively high bar, a little bit daunting, but it's been great working alongside of you all these years. Now, I've been here almost 10 years, and it's a huge education that I've been through and educated by some of the, you know, the best kind of journalists that I could hope to work with. So it's been a great opportunity, and I'm incredibly excited to be looking forward to the opportunity that's coming our way.
And we should say you've also had some pretty impressive things in the decade you've been here, Steve. I'm thinking, you know, it was your idea that Marfa Public Radio Host Exchange we did. That was an idea that you had. Some of the local features, the fishing news and the Pelagic Report, you've had a lot of contributions and a lot of innovation that's helped shape who we are, I guess, and our sound. So we're looking forward to more of that as well. And when we were talking earlier, when Sean came on, we didn't even have a full-time reporter. It was, you know, we were really, really small, and we've kind of added, you know, here and there along. We're still a small group, but not quite as small as we once were. But we're hoping to continue that growth.
We're hoping to continue the growth. And I think that the culture of journalism that's here is such an important part of moving forward. I think that when you point, Mindy, to those initiatives that I was a part of, none of them happen in a vacuum. It's not me just sitting here coming up with things. We have a group of people. You know what a small staff it is and how close we all are. And everybody is so supportive. When you come up with a new idea, you say, maybe we should try this. We try doing this. People generally nod and say, how would that work? Let's see if we can make that happen. And it's the same thing as we brainstorm series reporting ideas. Everybody is generally involved in that process. Everybody has a chance to pitch in their ideas. It's a great place to work, and I think that the work is much stronger for that.
Yeah. And we should say series ideas, that's something that we're in discussions now about. So if you have a thought, we'd love to know what issue or issues would you like to hear in new series? What would you like us to look into? You can tell us now, 866-999-4626, or shoot us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And if you're not thinking of it in the next 10 minutes or so that we're on the air, feel free to get in touch later, shoot us an email or give us a call and let us know your thoughts. Got an email from the Cape Cod Times. I believe you know this person, Linda Corcoran, Sean. She says, the Cape Cod Times wants to thank Sean Corcoran for his work helping to promote the reporting of the Cape and Islands Daily Newspaper. A huge thank you for all you've done and the best of luck in Boston.
Well, that's my wife, Linda Corcoran, and so I wasn't sure if I should mention her or not, but she's now injected herself into the conversation with that very nice note. Thank you. Linda is heard on the radio as well Thursday mornings. Mm-hmm. We heard Linda. She does the rundown for the Cape Cod Times on Thursday mornings, and she was on WCAI before I was. When she took her job, she was Sunday editor and now managing editor at the Cape Cod Times. She was on the roundup when you hosted it before I took it over.
Not enough, though. She should have been. She was so good. I wish she would have been on more.
Well, she's better on the radio than I am. So I really do wish that she would. She is fantastic on the radio because she really is organized and she plans. And again, she's right down the middle. Here are the facts. Mm-hmm. Take them as you like. Here's some quotation and take it in and make a decision how you feel about something.
Journalistic family over here.
Yes. Cape Cod media power couple.
That's right. One of the things we're small. We don't have a huge budget. So as much as we would love to hire a bunch of reporters, it's not something that we can do. But we use freelancers, and we always have. You started as a freelancer, Sean.
I did.
And that's something we're always looking for, freelancers with journalistic experience. That's important.
Right.
So that's something we are always having our eye open on. If anybody wants to send that our way, we'd love to take a listen.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the issues that we were talking about earlier that are sort of perennial issues, one that has gotten much bigger is the opioid crisis. And Sean, you recently, and I know you don't have any sound from this, but I want to mention it because you were doing this when you were a newspaper reporter up on the North Shore, when this sort of really started to notice. And that's an issue that we're going to continue to look at.
Right. Back in 2004, I was looking in the obituaries and I started to notice there were a lot of young people dying and it wasn't car accidents. And so I started to look into it and found out it was heroin overdoses, which at the time was a real surprise. That was a drug that had pretty much, we thought, gone away for mainstream society, but reporting told us that it had come back because of these pain pills. And I remember going to the district attorney of Essex County, John Blodgett, who's still there, and he said to me this quote, we feel the breeze, but we know the hurricane is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this message to get on board, folks. This is happening. It's happening in middle-class families, upper-class families, all across the spectrum, but we need to address it. And then nothing happened. I remember hundreds and hundreds of people turned out for a forum after that series, that newspaper series ran. And there was all this kind of motivation. And then I talked to John about it a year or so ago. It just kind of faded away until 2013, 2014. Meanwhile, thousands of people are dead. And I still don't think there's a clear plan to get people treatment on demand.
Right.
It's just not. So, that hurricane is here.
Yeah, exactly. So just quickly, what are some of the other memorable assignments that you've had that stand out?
I remember covering the F-15s when they left.
Oh, right.
They were certainly a visible, thing around the skies around here. I remember going through Scorton Creek in Sandwich with HUI researchers looking for killifish. And, I had... wading through, they're like, oh, it goes up to your knees. Next thing you know, it's up my chest, and I've got my gear above my head. And hanging out with the homeless as we waited to go into the Noah shelter one night and just talking to them about that.
Yeah, and you're a dog lover. Anybody who's here knows, and we remember your dog, Fee, who you used to bring to work with you so often.
Yes.
And the dog DNA story, come on, tell us about it.
I had a wonderful dog named Fee, as in Fee FIFO, and she had hiked the Appalachian Trail with me, and I'd taken her cross country. I pulled her in a little trailer on my bike. My 20s were very close with Fee, and at the time, 2005, maybe 2006, yeah, had these new DNA tests for dogs that you could buy a kit for like $100. So I said to NPR, hey, you buy the kit,
I'll do the story.
I'll do the test. And so but Fee didn't like things being put in her mouth. I remember that.
Yeah.
Do you have time for that?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Oh, okay.
Sean Corcoran of member station WCAI ordered a kit hoping to discover the heritage of his own mixed breed mutt.
If there's one thing my dog Fee doesn't tolerate well, it's teeth brushing. It's something we've worked out over the past 12 years. I don't touch her teeth, and she doesn't try to sink them into my hand.
Come on, Fee. No.
So I was a little concerned about this kit's long plastic stick with bristles on the end, which my wife Linda told me I was supposed to move around inside Fee's mouth.
Vigorously rub and rotate the swab's bristle head against the inside surface of the cheek. Oh, come here, Wolf. You're going to have to hold her head. She likes it.
Well, we got the results back. My all-American dog apparently was part German Shepherd and part Shar Pei and just
a little bit of
everything. 30-pound black dog. Yeah.
Tim Wood writes, just a note to thank Sean for all he's contributed to the Cape and local news coverage, especially including the local weeklies like the Cape Cod Chronicle and the Weekly Roundup. It increases our profile and helps make everyone better informed. Thanks, Tim. Thanks for that. And we should say, the news roundup's not going anywhere. Steve, you're going to be hosting that.
I'll be the new host going forward.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to that.
And we're going to still include all of the folks who are included now.
We'll be keeping the same format, speaking to journalists from all the way around the region, wrapping up the week's news.
Yeah. And you'll also still be hosting All Things Considered,
and I'll be
Monday
doing all
through Thursday.
Too.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So our schedule changes just a little bit.
Well, that was a nice note from Tim Wood,
yeah,
a regular on the roundup for many years.
Yeah. Maybe back when I was doing that. And, you know, I remember when we started doing that, and the news director we had said, there's not enough news here to do a weekly roundup.
Huh. Oh, man.
Wait,
I don't know. We go through maybe 20 stories a week, maybe more.
Yeah.
And I cut a lot. The reporters pitch quite enough, and editors as well.
There are some weeks that it's
It's a little harder.
It's a little hard to find.
Most of these reporters don't have trouble talking, so it's okay.
Yeah.
We can get through the hour.
Exactly. So, kind of best memory, because I know this is bittersweet for you. You're leaving, but you're still in the family, so to speak. But best memory.
My best memory. I don't know, Mindy. This might end up being the best memory. It's hard. It's hard to say. It's just so many people sitting. It's such an honor to when people allow you into their homes and trust you with their stories that you're going to tell it the right way. And most of the people we talk to, they're not media savvy. Mm-hmm. They don't sit in front of microphones. So you have to protect them in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, like I said, just an honor that I can continue to be a storyteller as my Irish heritage is maybe forced upon me and that people trust me with their stories.
Mm-hmm. Closing thoughts, Steve?
I want to ask Sean, any advice going forward?
All I can say is you just always try to do the right thing. Just always try. You make mistakes, but you try. And good journalism is about honesty.
Mm-hmm.
It's about always telling people what you're up to. And if that's good enough, moving forward with the journalism. But it's all about being honest.
Yeah. And I would say you both are good listeners. So that's another key thing, I think, is being able to listen to. Mm-hmm. As we're saying, everybody has these ideas in this little family of ours. Well, Sean, you will be here for the roundup tomorrow.
Yes.
And then you're off to Boston. And we wish you the best of luck. And we know you're going to keep in touch and we're going to see you because you'll be here occasionally. Sean Corcoran going up to be senior managing editor at our parent station, WGBH. Thanks for all the hard work and being part of our team.
Thank you, and this wasn't quite as bad as I thought it would be. I appreciate it.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.